Welcome into Searching for San Antonio, part of the San Antonio Podcast Network. This series explores the Alamo City by showcasing small businesses, nonprofit organizations, and all the wonderful people that make San Antonio what it is. Join in as we search for the true meaning of being a San Antonian. As we get started on another great episode of the podcast, I want to say thank you to all of the listeners who have been tuning into the show week in and week out. I hope you keep enjoying the podcast. I also want to give a Texas-sized welcome to anyone checking out the show for the very first time. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by visiting the link in bio and clicking support monthly. This week, I'll be sitting down with the co-founder of Once in a Wild, Amanda Winter. Once in a Wild, on the surface, may seem like just a mobile zoo, but it's much more than that. Not only do they bring more exotic animals to you, whether it's an office party, birthday party, or science class, they teach the importance of these animals and insects. They help educate and connect us with these animals to show us how we shouldn't be afraid of them and treat them like they're trying to attack us. Once in a Wild offers many services and programs, not just the ones I mentioned a second ago. Aside from bringing the animals and critters to you, they also provide programming on YouTube and Zoom. They came up with a cool name too. They call it their Zoom Room. I hope you kind of get that, Z-O-O, Zoom. The Zoom Room animal encounters are a perfect way for children to experience the wonders of a zoo without actually having to be there. Whether it's a classroom activity or a special occasion, such as a birthday party, Once in a Wild will show the animals to the viewers, talk about them, and answer any questions that the viewers may have. Additionally, they offer animal therapy. These hands-on experiences can benefit your physical and mental health. Animal therapy is great for all ages, especially seniors. These can be very rewarding experiences, especially with seniors in memory care. Really excited to get to the interview, but before I do, I want to remind the listeners that this episode is brought to you by Live from the Southside. Live from the Southside is a Latina-owned online and print publication that helps residents and visitors find things to do on the south side of San Antonio and throughout Texas. Their goal is to improve and expand community relationships through promoting positive stories, interesting people, and businesses in the community. You can visit their website at southsidesanantonio.com, which is also where you can order the Live from the Southside magazine. You can also order your copy of the magazine on Amazon or simply subscribe to their newsletter to receive your online edition. Lastly, you can follow them at Southside SATX on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Huge thank you to April Monterosa and Live from the Southside for supporting the podcast. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break and I'll be right back with my interview with Amanda Winter.
This is what we're made of. The businesses that line our streets and the customers that make them flourish. As a business owner, this is your community, your members, your regulars, your neighbors. Your business is unique. So are your customers. No matter who you need to reach, Spectrum Reach is here to help you connect with the right message on every screen. Visit SpectrumReach.com to connect with a local advertising expert. That's SpectrumReach.com.
Welcome back into Searching for San Antonio. Like I mentioned earlier, I have Amanda Winter, co-founder of Once in a Wild, joining me on the podcast. Amanda Winter has worked professionally with a wide variety of animals for over 18 years. She grew up right here in San Antonio, Texas, but obtained her zoology degree from the Santa Fe College Teaching Zoo in Florida. Amanda specializes in animal care, training, and presenting. She does this with birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, and invertebrates. Now, Amanda is only one half of Once in a Wild. The other founder is award-winning graphic designer Ricky Moeller. Ricky has over 20 years of experience and has worked with many Fortune 500 brands. But now he dedicates his time to Once in a Wild and has found a new calling to help promote wildlife conservation. Heads up going into the interview, we actually recorded this podcast in person, which was really cool, by the way. I got to tour the animals that they have and interact with some of the birds as well. But that said, we had some technical difficulties with the microphone, and for parts of the interview, you might hear a bit more background noise than other parts of the interview. When I started to edit, I had to increase the gain, or basically the volume, of certain parts of the audio, and that makes the background noise louder. Keep in mind that we did this in a room, and we're both speaking into the same microphone, so it's not like the Zoom recordings that most of the podcast episodes have been recorded on. But with that said, let's get into my interview with Amanda Winter. Amanda, thank you for joining me on Searching for San Antonio. I'm glad to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
So I was really excited when you and Ricky reached out. I hadn't come across Once in a Wild yet, but when I did, I was like going up and down the Instagram feed. I went through to like YouTube and watched the videos. I think it's really interesting what you have going on. We're going to get to that, of course, in the interview, but kind of give the listeners a backstory. How did you get to this point?
Well, I've been working with animals for a long time professionally. And even before that, as a little girl, I was always into animals in general. And especially animals that other people don't like. I've always kind of been fond of snails and snakes and spiders and things. Even as a little kid, I would catch snakes and all sorts of things in my backyard. And sometimes, occasionally in the house, a bug or a snake would get in and I would catch it from my mom. And I think she just kind of noticed I was a little different than most kids in that manner. And I wasn't scared of them. And I always loved going to SeaWorld and the zoo and any aquarium or anything at all to kind of see animals in real life and kind of, you know, just learn more and more and more. Always picking up a book, always watching National Geographic, always, you know, hungry for more knowledge on animals. And that was my passion from a very young age. I started working with animals, mostly working with horses when I was actually a teenager. I started kind of learning how to train horses and ride horses, of course. And I started working with people's horses when they would go out of town and they would have me kind of pet sit, I guess, but it's more specialized. And from there, I started thinking about a career in the vet world, actually, for a while. And after a little bit of experience with that for a few years, I decided it really wasn't for me. So I dove into actually working at SeaWorld for about a year. And okay. I had always kind of grown up going there. Every weekend, we had passes growing up here in San Antonio. So we always went, loved it. And as soon as I knew there was a job fair going on, this was years ago, of course, I ended up getting a job in the interpretation department, which is kind of like tour guiding and talking about animals all day.
Okay.
And I love teaching people about animals and my passion about them. And before that, I actually didn't have a degree in zoology at all yet. I have that now. But before I had a degree in fine arts and photography. My passion at the time was animals, but also photography. And I'm a very artistic person. And I wanted to work for National Geographic or something like that. But I started after working at SeaWorld, after the vet world and deciding that wasn't really for me, I got into the what we call the AZA world, which is the Association of Zoos and Aquarium. So after being kind of behind the scenes at SeaWorld, I said, yes, this is what I want to do. I want to have some kind of experience working at a zoo, aquarium, etc. But at the time, like I said, I was just doing like tour guiding and teaching people, which is fantastic. I loved it. But I wasn't working hands-on with those animals yet. So that's when I realized I did need to go back to school. So I did go back to school, and I got my zoology degree all the way in Gainesville, Florida. So over in Gainesville, they have a specialized degree, which is in zoology, but it's hands-on where they have a working zoo on campus. Okay. The Santa Fe College Teaching Zoo in Gainesville, Florida, right next to UF. We heard of University of Florida, very, very famous college. A lot of people go on to work, or sorry, to go to school at the University of Florida, but I didn't do that. I actually just got my specialized degree since I already had a degree in the first place. That was enough schooling really to get a job. So I came all the way back to Texas after that, started working at San Antonio Zoo. For a little while, I worked in their mammal department with all sorts of big mammals there. And then I went on to work at the Dallas Zoo, long story short. And then I actually opened up once in a while. But before that, I forgot to tell you, I actually worked at the Texas State Aquarium as well in Corpus a little while too. So those were kind of back to back with the San Antonio Zoo. So I've worked a whole bunch of different animal jobs, whether it be horses, veterinary world, Zoo World, Sea World, I mean, you name it. And I've
but now,
and
you have
now,
once in a while.
Yeah, and so, well, we moved back from Dallas, my fiance, Ricky, who you met as well, who also owns the company with me, we actually decided Dallas wasn't for us. So I really liked working at the Dallas Zoo, but I decided I wanted to come back home, long story short.
You miss San Antonio.
I miss San Antonio a lot. It is my hometown, and I love the culture here, so we really wanted to come back home and come back to our family, who all live here too. Ricky's family and my family live here. And we thought, what are we going to do now? Am I going to go back to San Antonio Zoo or SeaWorld or what? And I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. I think I want to do something different. So here we are, opening up our own business right before COVID.
yeah. Well, I'm in the same boat with you, you know, opening my business right before, I think 4 months before COVID. So kind of explain then, now that we're here in the present, you have once in a while, explain what it is.
Well, it's kind of a long explanation, but I can give you the short version. We're basically a mobile zoo. So we have our own animal collection, which can easily travel. And those include birds, small mammals, reptiles, amphibians, and creepy crawlies like invertebrates and things like that. So we have bugs and spiders and scorpions, all sorts of things. And all those animals are able to travel to classrooms, to birthday parties, to nursing homes, to offices, wherever you want to kind of supplement your day with animals or your event. And that's what we do now, but we're very based on education. So we love to teach people about the animals, make them fall in love with the animals, and want to protect the animals, but also have a great time at the same time.
when I was doing the pre-call with Ricky, he had mentioned that education is a big part of Once in a Wild. So it kind of explain why that is. Why is education so important when you're bringing these animals and reptiles to kids or even adults?
Yeah, really, it's for any age. And I really, truly believe that anybody can change no matter what the age you are currently, all the way down to, you know, pre-K, all the way up to senior citizen. I feel like a lot of people do have misconceptions about some of the animals that I love, like snakes and spiders and etc., maybe bats, etc., a lot of a misunderstood type animal. And that's where my passion kind of comes from, is teaching people that animals are all the same. They all have a purpose. They all are important in the natural environment, and they should all be respected. So that's where I'm kind of coming from, because I would want to be respected and not judged, you know, before somebody gets to know me just on my appearance or what they have heard about me. So that I've always kind of felt like that about animals. I feel like a lot of them get a bad rep. And
like
everybody,
a tarantula.
Yeah, and a tarantula, for example. So a lot of people, I mean, they really love pandas, but they really love dolphins, they love giraffes, etc. And that's great. I think all those animals are fantastic. But I, unfortunately, you hear a lot about people hating snakes and harming snakes and harming spiders. And those animals are extremely important in the food chain. And if we don't have those animals around, even in our own backyard, we can actually get sick, even more sick than we are now.
Oh, wow.
So that's very important to me. And I just feel like they kind of deserve the best chance they can get out there. But also, the more people kind of learn, the more they can be capable of changing their habits and maybe teaching their children, etc. Or the children can teach their parents, which I see a lot.
So what are some ways that if you're with, let's say, a group of kids, and let's just say they're in between 5 and 10. Okay. And, you know, a lot of times at that age, of course, you're going to have people that, like yourself, Amanda, maybe you liked insects or little animals, but you're going to have a lot who don't because they've been told or they see on TV or whatever, they get frightened by a spider or they get frightened by a snake.
Mm-hmm.
What are some ways that you can get kids more, you know, you can adapt them better and have them understand that, hey, I mean, they're part of the ecosystem just like you are.
Absolutely. Well, there's many ways. And number one is going to be to encourage people to learn. Number one, you're just going to start learning, you know, with, you know, what we do here Once in a Wild, people will start learning about the animal in the first place. And the more you learn, the more you know, obviously, and the less scary it is. It's not a scary monster in a movie. It's something that's an actual real animal, has a purpose. They have these adaptations, maybe like 8 legs or hair or 8 eyes or whatever creeps you out about a spider, or maybe somebody else about a spider, or no legs with a snake. I feel like the animals that are a little bit more different than us, those are the ones that people are a little bit more afraid of. But once you realize or learn why they have those adaptations, then I think they make more sense, and you go, oh, okay, they're not like scary, it's just because they have to have these features. So for example, spiders are venomous, right? Most spiders have venom, but venom isn't necessarily harmful to humans. But spiders need their venom to be able to eat because they don't have teeth. So they give their food venom, which is like a bug, right? And the bug turns into a drink, and then they can drink their bug.
Wow.
And that's how they actually survive. So they need
I learned
that.
Something today.
So there's many ways to, number one is learning, and number two is what we call exposure. So exposure therapy, or just exposure in general to these animals, and you realize, oh, they're not after me. They're not trying to bite me. They're just sitting there, minding their own business.
Well, they're probably scared of you, if anything.
Exactly. That's another thing, is animals are a lot more scared of us.
They're not trying to harm you,
per se. Because they're big, scary animals to most other critters.
Well, speaking of, you know, we talked about you do the education piece, you kind of alluded to therapy being another service. So kind of talk about the different services that you offer to businesses, to schools, to families.
That's a great question. So we do offer a whole bunch of things, and we're a brand new business, as you know. So we're still trying to figure out all the things we can offer. But as of now, of course, we offer the educational programs where we teach about the animals. Typically, we'll start with an hour program, and we'll bring about 8 animals and learn about them one by one. And usually there's a touching opportunity or an up-close opportunity as well when we're in person. Or if you do a virtual program, you can learn about them through the virtual world, through Zoom or something like that, or whatever platform they want. And that's still something, you know, so they can learn.
I saw the Zoom rooms. I saw that.
Yeah, Zoom rooms. We do live streams too, of course, as you know, YouTube. But also, we do offer, like you said, animal therapy. So it can be exposure therapy to spiders, snakes, and bugs, if you're afraid of those animals, even birds. And some people are afraid of tortoises and turtles. And we bring a tortoise or a turtle, and they say, oh, they're not so bad. So that's exposure therapy. We'll bring our sweetest, nicest, most well-behaved examples of those kind of scary animals, if you will, or animals that make people a little apprehensive, I guess. And they get a good experience, and therefore their fear starts to diminish. And it could be as simple as looking at the animal first, then getting a little closer, and if they decide they're comfortable, maybe holding the animal and things like that. And then, of course, we also offer our little mini petting zoo experience, which is a more casual type encounter, if you will, that's really suited for small children or even really all ages, maybe at events or at a birthday party where we have a little like pen and we have some of our animals that are safe to kind of mingle together and safe for you to come in with our rabbit and our guinea pigs, bearded dragon, tortoises, and some other animals as well that you can kind of mingle with, take some photos with, and just enjoy them. And I feel like I'm forgetting something, but oh, photo opportunities. We also offer photo opportunities just to kind of get some fun time with the animals too, maybe at events or just whatever, offices.
What I think, that's what I think is so cool, because growing up, I would see, whether it be friends of mine or mm-hmm. or you might see family members who have a petting zoo come to like their birthday party. And it's usually what? A pig, a goat, a mm-hmm. pony. And trust me, I mean, that's fun.
Absolutely.
But I think that's what I think is so interesting about Once in a Wild is that these are just exotic animals. These are animals that you may not get to have this kind of opportunity with mm-hmm. unless you're in the wild.
right, exactly. So we do definitely offer a little bit of both. We have a few smaller domestic animals too, and who knows what we'll have in the future. We're always kind of growing and expanding all the time and thinking of new endeavors in the future, which will be fun. We mostly provide exotic animals, or animals that most people wouldn't get up close and personal with, which is kind of the special thing about us and my background, as you know.
Well, I'm curious to know, are there permits that are required? I mean, what is that like? You can't just have one, right?
No, most of the animals that we do have, we don't recommend everybody just getting as a pet. Some of them are technically allowed to be pets for some people, and some of them are not. So yes, it does require permits to even just bring animals for presentations in a professional manner. You have to have permits for that. You have to have a city permit as well as a USDA permit for mammals, and I have to have special permissions for local species as well, like our opossums and a skunk actually coming to join our family soon.
And to, again, I mean, that goes to prove my point. Like, those are things that you don't, I mean, I would never think of myself interacting with a skunk besides smelling one.
Right. Like, oh, we're familiar with that stench they have or a smell. But yeah, so seeing an animal up close and personal like that maybe give you a little bit of a different perspective. But yeah, so we definitely do require permits, special permissions, all of that. Of course, a business license as well to even operate. And there are certain rules we have to follow as well to be safe. We always try to do that.
COVID threw a wrench in everybody's lives, everybody's business. kind of like myself, you started a little bit before that. Mm-hmm. How did it change or alter your plans for Once in a Wild?
It completely changed everything. So we literally were only public events at first, and we opened up right before COVID hit, and about a year before that. We were trying to kind of birth this new business and have the idea for it, of course, before we even moved back home, like I said. But after that happened, we had to basically go virtual for everything. And it was either do that or stop. And I wasn't about to stop because I had definitely put everything into opening this new business and my passion for it. So
right.
I did a few days of crying and being really upset about all my events being canceled, because I did have probably 6 months worth of events that were booked. Some were promotional and trying to, you know, get our name out there and get people to know who we are. And a lot of them are paid too. So that was really upsetting. But after about a week, we kind of just made the decision to get on YouTube, get on Facebook, focus on social media too, and make sure we had at least one post a day and 3 live streams a week. And I would jump on Instagram live too. And we just kind of went from there. And we sold our Zoom room as well, our Zoom animal encounters too. At that time was the first time that we started offering that. And that was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this and still keep
that's
it
what
exciting?
I'm thinking, yeah.
But it actually was a big hit because people were really hungry for something fun at home.
Everybody was
really bored, I guess. But we really, really tried, and it's been pretty successful.
Yeah. And I think in a way, what COVID did to a lot of individuals and businesses, especially small businesses, I can tell just from what you just explained, but also from my own personal experience, it kind of made you adapt to that virtual environment.
Yeah.
And even though as a society, we may have been kind of going towards that anyway,
mm-hmm.
sped up the process, and it made you kind of learn all those new things. Obviously, it was terrible, and we all know that. But in a way, it kind of helped that.
I definitely agree. I think it was a blessing in disguise, because it forced me to kind of adapt in that way. And I think if I hadn't, we wouldn't have been as well-known as we are this year, as we were last year. I mean, it really helped us out to get our name out there. And it's honestly, like, it's, I wouldn't say it's easier to do virtual than it is in person, but it's a little bit more cost-effective.
Sure.
Because I don't have to travel, and I can literally, everything's at home. We're home-based. Our animals are here, and our studio is here. So it's a little bit nice in that way.
What are some of the popular animals, mammals, insects that you've seen people just gravitate towards?
That's a great question. The rabbit is a big one, and that's one I never expected to be super popular. I'm actually more of a reptile person, bird person, and creepy crawly person. I like a lot of animals, though, and I like a variety, which is partially why I wanted to go back to doing this sort of job, because jumping around from job to job, like working with just mammals, working with, more variety, I tend to gravitate more towards a variety. I just like that better personally. But the animals that are really popular nowadays are going to be our Flemish giant rabbit. His name is Sandor. He's almost always selected because we typically let people select the animals they want to see. I'll give them my whole list and they pick 8 and then I go from there. But he's really popular. Another one that's really popular is our boa constrictor, because I think people do want to see a big snake, which is kind of cool. Who else is popular? Let's see. Our guinea pig is really popular. Iggy the guinea pig. He's a long-haired guinea pig with like a comb over. He's super cute. You've probably seen him on the channel in the past. He's also really sweet and holdable.
Does everybody have a name?
Yes, absolutely. Except for the Madagascar hissing cockroaches, because they're always multiplying and I can't tell them apart. So, so everybody else does have a name. And then our biggest tarantula, Blondie, is another big popular kind of creepy crawly animal. People want to see a big tarantula.
And people, like, are they going on their arm, their bodies? Are they actually, like, interacting?
So sometimes our tarantula is able to be held by somebody who's going to be responsible with her, because believe it or not, they're pretty fragile animals. We're a lot more strong than they are. So it's more of a concern with their safety than like the human safety, because they're harmless to humans, the ones that I would actually hold for people. We do have tarantulas that are not holdable, that just kind of stay okay in their enclosure and you can see them through there. But it really kind of depends on the person. I'm very selective about that. But some animals are fine to hold. Like we have our ball python. Ball pythons are very safe to hold. They're strong enough for people to kind of hold them and they're going to be okay. And the ball python's going to be okay at the same time. I'm trying to think who else people can hold. The smaller tortoise is a good example of kind of older children and up can kind of hold him and take a photo. He's really popular too. His name is Shelton. John.
I saw a picture, and it might have just been a picture, but is there an otter that you've interacted with?
He's not an otter. He's a ferret. So ferret Loki is an extra large ferret because he's what we call a holistic ferret. He is not a pet store ferret. Like you see in pet stores, they're really tiny.
Right.
A lot of different reasons. Which
this one looked bigger.
But he's a big ferret. He's actually especially bred, and he's a hybrid. So he's part European polecat, which is their wild counterpart, just like a wolf dog. So he's going to be naturally larger, very dark. He kind of does look like an otter, and they're related to otters. But his name is Loki. Okay.
I was wondering that. I was like, oh my gosh, because my girlfriend and I, we love otters.
Oh, very cool.
And we've never like interacted with one. I know Ricky was telling me that sometimes they can be a little dangerous, even the river otter, like the smaller ones.
Yes, right? I've worked with the ones at the zoo, for example, in SeaWorld. They're Asian small clawed otters. So it's actually one of the smallest species of otter in the world. But otters get quite large as well. There's North American river otters and even sea otters are quite
large.
Otters,
yeah.
But all of that family, it's the mustelid family, and those guys are the weasel family essentially.
Okay.
And they're all hunters, so they have very sharp teeth, just like a cat. And since they're not really domesticated, they are quite wiry and wily animals.
I've seen that because so I follow this YouTube channel and they have an otter as a pet, which here you can't do apparently.
And I don't condone that.
Right. But I think they're in Japan.
Okay.
Is where these people live, and that's why they have an otter as a pet. What I enjoy about it is that they treat it pretty much like a dog in the sense of they take him out for a walk and he just interacts with like their dog that they actually have. And he's just very domesticated there.
That's so strange.
It's so strange. It really is strange because, again, you don't see that here.
No, and that is not typical for an otter at all. Otters are actually one of the more feared animals, like for SeaWorld trainers, for example, since I've been going to SeaWorld my whole life and I know a lot of the trainers there since I work there. They're like, yeah, that's the one animal that everybody gets bit by.
And that's,
but they're not as
big,
so it's not as serious.
You don't think of,
but it's still an animal to be feared, I guess.
Well, I guess that is like the exception to the rule.
If you're seeing that one, it probably just has a good relationship with the family, I would imagine. Just like some dogs and some cats are like
right.
that. Our ferrets are kind of like that too. They're a little bit less otterish. Because ferrets are our domestic animal, the domesticated ferrets. But since ours are very, very healthy and one of them's a hybrid, they're a little less trustworthy with like strangers. So we don't let people hold or touch them. Just me.
Well, what I also think is funny about otters is their voice, like their little squeaky, like, it just doesn't. I was like, what? That's an otter making that noise? Like it's so bird. It's so different. But no, we love otters. My girlfriend and I love animals. We try to. We've been to a few zoos. We haven't been to a ton. Of course, the one here. We've been to SeaWorld, of course. We've been to the snake farm, too, on the way to Austin. The San Diego Zoo, of course.
That's super cool.
And then more recently, last time we were able to travel, which is 2019, we went to New York and we went to the Central Park Zoo. We want to go to the Bronx Zoo when we go back.
Yes, I do too.
But it was just so much fun. And we try to do an animal encounter at every single one.
Awesome.
And then whenever we go to California, we usually, even if we just are going to LA for whatever reason, we always take a trip down to San Diego to La Jolla, which is where you can get pretty up close with the seals, which we didn't know about. We didn't know about until we went. We were just going to La Jolla just to go. And then they were right there. And I was like, what? What I don't like about that, and I think it frustrates the both of us, is that people go there and they try to touch them. And it's like, no, what are you trying to do? Like, anyways, it just gets real frustrating because these people are trying to like touch them. It's like, no, just take a picture.
Absolutely. Like, that's enough.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like unless you're with a professional helping you, that's a terrible idea. And that's something I always encourage, especially kids, so they can teach their parents, is if you see animals in your own backyard, camping, out on a walk, wherever, and it's a wild animal, don't touch them. Don't pick them up unless that animal is in distress and it needs help. Like maybe it's an orphan baby animal or something like that. Then you want to call a professional and ask advice before picking it up and touching it. Because a lot of people, for example, they'll pick up a baby bird and they think it needs help and they're actually probably just learning how to fly. So parents are typically watching them. And there's a lot of kind of guidelines and that I could go on a huge tangent with that. But in general, it's best to just leave wildlife alone. And they'll leave you alone back. And that's less disruptive to their day-to-day life. And they can survive just fine and fill their role they need to fill as a predator, prey, in between, whatever they are. And they're very important. And it's really important not to harm them, even if we're scared of them, which goes back to my whole purpose, right?
Now, traditionally, when I think of a petting zoo, even an exotic petting zoo, you know, I think of bringing it to children's birthday parties. I think of it going to a school, maybe for a science class. But you also offer the service of going to maybe a business.
Absolutely.
And so how, number one, have you done that already?
Yes, I have.
And number two, so what is that like and what's the importance of it?
It's a lot of fun, and it's really important to teach all ages, like I keep saying again and again. But I think it's also important for their kind of daily routine to be broken up with something fun or something more natural than just a building. Like, for example, some offices will make sure that their employees get outside from time to time and not just sit either at home nowadays, right? They're sitting at home all day. I need to get outside, walk around, breathe some fresh air, etc. But it's kind of neat to break up, I guess, traditional office workers. What would you call that, like,
I don't know. Yeah,
I don't work in that kind of job, so I take that for granted sometimes. But I know with a mundane schedule, I think you're less productive. I think you're certainly less happy without something fun in the middle of the day. And what's nice about us is we can literally bring animals anywhere. Within reason. We can bring them to an office inside. We can meet outside for kind of a picnic scenario, whatever you would like. That's nice because we're very mobile. We're very, our animals are handheld for the most part. So I can just kind of hold them and teach you guys about them or whoever I'm going to teach. And some of the animals are holdable for the guests, for the, I guess, employees, what have you, to kind of have a little bit of a different something in their day, something that makes them happy and smile. And it's good for team building as well and morale and all that stuff. And I've had offices where they've actually arranged, it was like a family day where they brought their kids to work too. And that's kind of a fun way to just make it a little bit more fun. You'd be the best boss ever if you hire us, right?
Yeah, well, and I used to work in office building. I worked at Frost Bank downtown, and I'm just imagining like that would have been so cool to have these animals just come in. Yeah, because like you said, it kind of breaks up that mundane day, the monotonous, you know, work that you just have, and maybe looking at an office window and you know, anyways, it would be a lot of fun. You've grown a lot to this point, and I know you still want to grow some more. What are some maybe ideas or future plans you have in mind?
Oh, that's a great question. So we would absolutely love to have a facility. I think we will always be home base where we're living on site, where we can have a good eye on our animals. And I'm just that kind of personality where I like to have a good say in what's going on and also my hands in it, because I'm very like hands-on with everything that I've done work-wise ever. I've never had a traditional office job ever. So I always like to keep working. But I think we would love to have a facility where people can come visit us. And whether that's like separate from our actual house, and maybe it's just on the same property and we have like animal buildings, maybe you have separate buildings for different types of animals. Maybe we have like a reptile building or a bird aviary for people to visit, etc. But I would love to have people come and see tours and actually how we operate, because I want to be very transparent. I want people to see behind the scenes as well as the events. That way they can see how the animals are taken care of. And I want to teach people how to take care of their own animals too at home. That's one of my other passions. So that would be really fun to do tours, like private tours and things like that. Maybe even have like a party room or something that people can rent out and visit and have their parties there. And then of course we're always looking to get new animals and maybe larger animals in the future. Maybe some animals that people have to come visit and we can't actually take away and visit you.
Yeah.
And we would also love to have a like an additional nonprofit as well, because we're actually not a nonprofit yet. But I would love to have an additional nonprofit. That way we can rescue more animals that are local, like birds of prey and things like that, because there's a huge need for a lot of those animals as well. We do a little bit of that now with subcommittees and things like that, but we're not actually a nonprofit yet. So that would be another kind of long-term or short-term goal. Who knows?
Well, I think it's important that you're being transparent, that you mm-hmm. want to continue to be transparent as you go into the future and you grow. I think that's really important, handling these different animals and or insects. And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, did you watch Joe Exotic and the Carole Baskin? So what are your thoughts on how they handled, like, I mean, they each did their own thing,
mm-hmm.
but like,
I know, right?
But like, what was your thoughts on the whole documentary and what they did?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm really glad that documentary got made, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions with either roadside zoos, private zoos, circuses, things like that. And the truth is there are good and bad of all of those things. There's private owned zoos like us that are, in my opinion, just fine. And there's private owned zoos that aren't. And I think they need a little bit more exposure, to be honest with you. I think it is good to be transparent with your care and transparent with your operations. That way people can see the difference. And there are many ways to tell from, like, I don't want to say good and bad, but for lack of better terms, good from bad. And I feel like if a lot of it is just for profit, you're just trying to be famous, you're trying to, you know, basically be a narcissist.
Yeah.
I think that was a big difference. And you forgot Doc Antle too, who was the other zoo owner that they featured as well. So you've got Doc Antle, Carole Baskin, and Joe Exotic as well. All three of them are bad in different ways. There's different facilities. Some of the facilities are nicer than others, but then you've got like three examples of what not to do. But I think it's really important for the average person to see something like that, like kind of the extreme version. And it's all true, by the way, because I know people that know these people and they're just showing you the surface, like the little bit, unfortunately. Yeah. But it's really important for people to see those type of documentaries, if you will, or shows, because there's other ones like Blackfish, for example, which are very, very over-exaggerated on what really doesn't go on at SeaWorld, for example. So I think it was kind of really important. And of course, we don't want to be anything like Joe Exotic or any of those other guys, right? So one thing that I don't agree with is hiring on people for free, that work for free. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having volunteers come in and they really want to volunteer, but working your people to the bone and not paying them, giving them benefits,
no incentive to do the right thing.
Right. I mean, that's not how I want to be treated either. I think people are just as important as animals. So that was one thing that kind of stood out to me. I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, I know you're still early on in your existence mm-hmm. as far as an organization mm-hmm. and you doing this work. I know you just mentioned the different plans and ideas you have for the future. But how do you want to be remembered, or how do you want Once in a Wild to be remembered?
That's a very, very hard question to answer for me. I think I would really appreciate people remembering me as somebody who stood up for animals, who advocated for certain species, like we said already, that aren't necessarily as well loved as some others, because they're all important in their own way. And I would love for people to see my passion more than anything. I'm not doing this for the money, of course. Like, no zookeeper or animal professional really does this for the money if they're really passionate about it. We really care about the animals. And I know that's kind of cliche, but we really do. And I would love to be remembered as somebody who wants to teach something new to somebody every time I meet them, and that way you can fall in love with these animals that you maybe didn't really like at first, and you get to know them and you understand that they're important and worth saving, and not even just endangered species like pandas, but average everyday jumping spiders or whatever you see in your backyard. Those guys are worth it too. So very, very important. And if you can change some of your habits, like, I mean, as simple as picking up trash or recycling or using non-plastic straws that you throw away every day, that's a big difference as well. If I can get you to make little changes in your life, then I've done something and a good service for animals all over the world.
Absolutely. Now, tying everything back into San Antonio, you were born here.
I know you
moved and you came back, and but you were born here. You're from San Antonio. Your organization serves San Antonio.
Yeah, and surrounding cities too.
What do you think makes up a San Antonian?
Oh my goodness. So being born and raised here, you know, the culture is very important to me. Absolutely love the feel of San Antonio. I really missed it when we moved away. I think it's a very friendly culture here. I think people look each other in the eyes and smile. We hold each other's doors open for each other. The driving's a lot more bearable here than it is in other cities in Texas, in my opinion. For me, there's kind of a, like I said, a better culture. There's always something to do. Great food.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't beat it, right?
A good and a bad thing, right?
It sure can. And I really enjoy just the people that I get to kind of hang out with on a daily basis. And I'm always meeting new faces, and I feel like I never meet a stranger, really. So always making new friends all the time. So that's what I love about San Antonio. It's a very friendly town, and it's a big city that feels like a small town.
Yep. In a way. I hear that. I would say 8 out of 10 episodes do, and I ask, they say the same thing. And it, as cliche as it may sound, it's true.
It's so true.
It's so true. It's a big little town. Mm-hmm. People know that have been here for a while. Amanda, it's been a pleasure. Before I let you go, though, make sure to plug in your socials, your YouTube. How can we find you? How can we watch you? How can we follow you?
Absolutely. So our main platforms, I would say, are Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, the big three. We're also on Twitter, and we're also on TikTok, too. Woohoo! But you can find all the links at onceinawild.com. That's the easiest way to find all those things at our website. Easy enough, onceinawild.com.
Well, thank you again. I'm glad you took time to speak to me. And it was a pleasure for me to learn more about Once in a Wild. And like I said in the interview, I mean, there's a few things you said I learned. So most definitely, I appreciate your time.
Of course. My pleasure.
That's going to wrap up my interview with Amanda Winter, co-founder of Once in a Wild. We're going to take a quick ad break and we'll be right back, so stay tuned. Hey guys, it's Zach. As some of you may know, I help people plan for retirement. And as your advisor, I can not only show you how money truly works, but put you in control of your money today and in retirement. If you're looking to schedule a financial review, please give me a call at 210-760-0409. Welcome back into Searching for San Antonio. I want to thank Amanda again for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate her for taking the time to speak with me. I know she's been on much bigger productions like the local news, and it was an honor to have her on my podcast to talk about Once in a Wild. You know, I found it really interesting, the work that they're doing, not just because it's cool. It's cool work that you get to interact with these animals on a daily basis and get to introduce them and teach about them to students, to children, to adults. I think it's really important that they're doing this because, like you heard Amanda mention multiple times, I think the way we're brought up, we're taught to be scared of some of these creepy crawlies, as she called them, right? But just spiders or maybe a snake. We're taught to be afraid of it or to kill it if you can because it might attack you. And it's hard to get rid of these habits because, again, these insects do look very different. But it's really important that we look at these creatures and understand that they're probably more scared of us than we are of them in a lot of situations. And so, you know, we have to learn to accept that they're part of the world just like we are. And I think that's what they're really doing with Once in a Wild. I can't say enough about the job that they're doing, Ricky and Amanda, there at Once in a Wild. I did think it was really interesting, like I said earlier before the interview got started, that I got to do kind of a tour of their house where they keep a lot of these animals and creepy crawlies. I'm going to keep saying that just because I like that phrase that Amanda kept using. But they keep them all there. And when she was giving me the little tour of them, you know, they're kept in separate rooms. They were so cool to interact with. I know when we went into one of the rooms where the birds are, the bird kept flying on me, on my head, and just like standing there. But it's so cool how friendly they are with humans. If you're listening to this podcast and maybe you're a science teacher, or one of your kids' birthdays is coming up and you're thinking of what to do for the birthday party and what kind of theme you want to have. I mean, think about an organization, a business, like Once in a Wild. Think about scheduling them to come show some of the animals. And I'm sure the kids would love that, getting to interact with all the different reptiles and the bunnies and the birds. You know, I think that would be really cool. I think the kids would really enjoy it. If it's a science class, I'm sure they would enjoy it. The other service that I thought was pretty interesting was bringing the animals to the workplace. Just because she's exactly right. The workplace can become a little monotonous. It can become a little boring and mundane. And having, you know, a snake crawl up to your desk or something of the sort may, you know, kind of break up that monotony and make it more fun and kind of just loosen you up for the day or for the week. Lastly, I just want to say I also admire her facing the challenges that COVID presented. I know a lot of us talk about that. A lot of guests talk about the challenges that COVID presented to them in their respective industries. And just like Amanda, you know, it presented these challenges, but she overcame them and she thought of different ways to still interact with her audience, her followers, right? By creating these Zoom rooms, which is really cool. You know, back when we were more in a quarantine and not going out as much, there wasn't much to do except for getting on TikTok, getting on YouTube, but you were able to actually get in a Zoom room with Amanda and the animals and ask questions and interact and see them pop up on the screen, which I thought was really cool. Definitely give them a follow. I know on Facebook and Instagram, it's Once in a Wild Zoo. I believe on Twitter, it's just Once in a Wild. Go look them up on YouTube at Once in a Wild. I think you'll really enjoy the content. It's a great follow, especially on Instagram with all the pictures. Again, I thank Amanda for coming on the show, but that is going to do it for another episode of Searching for San Antonio. I really hope you enjoyed the interview. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe on your preferred listening platform, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, whatever it may be. But if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, I please ask that you leave a rate and review if you haven't already. If you want to keep up with the show and our talk show series, SA Talk, please give us a follow on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at SA Pod Network. If you have questions about advertising or partnering opportunities, please reach out to me at Zachary@SAPodNetwork.com. That's Zachary@SAPodNetwork.com. If you're a listener and want to support the show, visit our link in bio on any social media platform and click support monthly. Thanks again for listening, and Viva San Antonio.